Hi, this is Paul Collette from Spurs, and I'm responsible for what goes on at halftime. And listen, I've got to tell you, I'm very excited because you're listening to the Hot Spurs podcast.
Best you've ever seen in 91, 82. We had some fun.
Okay, welcome, welcome. We've got a very special guest this week. Unfortunately, Colin from Northern Ireland can't be with us tonight. He's doing a bit of Christmas shopping. So we've got the perfect replacement. It is a Spurs legend. It's Paul Coit, who does all the MCing at halftime and what have you. And we're delighted to have you on the show. Been trying for weeks, Paul.
Bless you, Steve. It's nice. Very nice you asked me. It's just a shame that Steve is off Christmas shopping and I'm the replacement for Christmas shopping. But look, I don't mind. It's lovely to speak to you. How are you? You well?
Yeah, very, very, very good. I've met you several times. Just to yeah. Let the listeners know, our first meeting was at Chris Waddle.
It was in the 60s, wasn't it? It was in the 60s.
Well,
and then we were on holiday together. Then we got married. We were married for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And then the divorce. And now we're friends again. And that's good.
You know, I had a funny feeling that I wouldn't have to ask you many questions tonight because I thought you might be a. I thought you might be a bit of a Robin Williams type guest where Parkinson just asks one question and he just sits back for half an hour.
I'll just do as I'm told.
The first time I met you was Chris Waddle evening. I don't know if you remember this, but
I do very well.
I wake up in cold sweats. My hero, Chris Waddle, lucky enough to be on his table. Brilliant with the night with Paul Allen as well, who's a great guy.
Yeah.
Chatting to him all night, and then Chris Waddle. And then after about... 5 or 6 beers, mate of mine who I went with nudged me and said, "Yeah, sing Hotshot Tottenham to Chris Waddle." So I go, "Yeah, all right then. Great, that sounds like a great idea." So I goes, "Chris, Paul, do you want me to sing Hotshot Tottenham?" And they both looked at each other and sort of shook their heads, as did you, Paul, and the
yep.
photographer guy. But
that's
Paul
right.
Allen's wife or girlfriend said, "Yeah, go on, I'd like to hear that." Well, you know, being a school teacher, I've got no inhibitions. So I proceeded to sing the first verse and the chorus and was starting the second verse before I looked around the table and everyone sort of had their head in their hands going, "What is this bloke doing?" Well, listen, I woke up the next day and I was like, "Oh, God, what have I done?" And I saw you about a month later up in one of the lounges and I said, "Do you remember old Scott?" You went, "Yeah, I remember you." And I went, "It wasn't too bad, was it?" And you were like, "Yes, it was. That was terrible." So,
but you know what? The best, when stuff like that happens, I don't know about you, Steve, but what you end up with, and you probably know a lot of my Spurs stories, which are highly embarrassing, but what you end up with at the end of the day is a good story. And you know what? I bet you don't regret it. If you could go back, I bet you're glad you did it. I'm not glad you did it because it was dreadful, but I'm sure you should be glad that you did it.
Well, I got to say, you know, the good thing was that they weren't horrible, you know. Paul Allen,
no, they weren't horrible. It was the slow hand clap, the bloke that hanged himself halfway through it. But apart from that, the fact you do have blood on your hands, not to worry, you know, at least you did it.
Yeah, well, let's move on then to obviously the question that I've got to ask you. Let's be serious for a second. We've had a roller coaster season already. With a decent start, a few up and down results, the Man City atrocity, and then the fight back, if you like, with the last few games. So the big question is, Paul, first question for you is, where are you going on your holidays?
Well, how did I know that was coming? Do you want the story? Am I going to have to tell you the whole story?
Well, I know you've told it several times, but I'd love to hear it again. And the listeners,
okay.
It's a great story.
All right. Well, this is the deal. This is okay, when was it? Was it about 5 or 6 years ago? This is when Martin Jol did his end of season rant on the pitch. And I've got to tell you that when you go out on the pitch, and I almost did the interview with the manager last day of the season, last game, and we have a little chat, and then we do the Player of the Season awards. But I've got to tell you that when you actually go out on the pitch, it's really difficult to hear anything that's going on. All you hear is like an echo around you. So when he was doing his speech, and he's going, "Oh, you know, this is all I can hear. It's my shadow." And then I hear cheering, and I'm thinking, I can't understand a word the guy's saying because I just can't get it. So then I think, right, I've got to ask him a few questions. And it's, Steve, it's in my style. I'll always ask, not necessarily, the sort of questions that they'd ask on Match of the Day. I'm a fan, first and foremost, and I want to know about the people, so I'll always ask questions that make you fan.
Yeah.
So we've said about the season and said, you know, how did the season go? And what actually really happened was, so I'm doing all this, I'm saying, have you making any signings? And he's going, well, I don't know, because I'm going, you know, I'm going to be going on holiday. I said, oh, are you? Where are you off to? And it was sort of like a joke to see if anybody else would go, and then they would see him. So I said, where are you going on holiday? And then it was left there. So a bit of light and shade, that was it. So then it came to about 2 or 3 months later, and I was hosting an evening with Martin and Chris Hughton. And this wasn't long before they went. So, and it was at Enfield Working Men's Club. So, you know, I was thinking, you know, does he remember who I am? You know how you'd like drop a clue in when you speak to someone, you know, oh, I don't know, you know, I remember. So I said, well, Martin, this time, you know, when I ask you questions, I don't want you to sort of take the microphone off me and then just go talking for 15 minutes and so. And he was going, oh, you were there that day? And I was thinking, well, yeah. And he goes, you know the guy that was asking me the questions?
I just remind you, Paul, by the way, don't swear, because I'm a teacher.
Okay. I won't swear. And he says, you know the guy that was asking me the questions? I said, yeah. He goes, he asked me, he goes, where are you going on holiday? What kind of an idiot is that? What kind of a stupid guy? And I'm thinking, yeah, I said, you won't get that for you, won't get that sort of behavior from me, Martin. I'll tell you that. So I sort of left it there, and I'm thinking, blimey. So as I'm actually getting into the interview, I'm sure, as one of my questions came up, he's thinking, this guy's asking me about what I do, what time I get into work. And then I think he actually twigged that I was the idiot that asked him that on the pitch. But you know what? I thought it was a very good question, quite honestly.
But he didn't call you an idiot, did he? And we're not gonna say what he actually said. But
yeah, he did. It was a something idiot. Yeah, he referred to the man who was asking him the questions as that, not actually calling me that face to face, because obviously he would be intimidated by me otherwise. But yeah. I've got to say, we did have a lot of fun with Martin, and he was always good fun to interview, and always friendly as well.
I mean, I look at Martin Joel and the way that he was at Spurs, and I just can't understand how he's you know, not been so successful. I mean, when you look at him as a guy, you know, big old fella, you wouldn't want to argue with him, but he's got that arm around the shoulder mentality, and he's brilliant in interviews and what have you. I don't know how it hasn't worked for him, how it didn't work for him at Spurs in the end, and how he didn't, you know, obviously lost the dressing room at Fulham. To me, I can't understand how you wouldn't want to work for the guy.
Well, it's difficult for us to say. I mean, you see people, their public persona, and that was the thing about Martin. You know, you'd see, you know, we only see part of it, and you think, yeah, and, you know, he seems like a great guy, and everybody loves him. And I always do say that, you know, towards the end of Spurs, I mean, you know, we're Spurs fans. You know, we'd like to wear our rose tinted spectacles, but if at the end of Martin, you know, it wasn't going very well. It was really bad.
Yeah.
But then when it was good, it was great. But when it was bad, it was pretty horrendous towards the end. So I'm not surprised he went. But, you know, who knows about Martin? He'll always bounce back and, you know, he'll be all right, I'm sure.
Yeah, I hope so. So let's go right back to the start then, Paul. So, you know, listeners, if you don't know. And I'm interested in how you got the job, because we've met 2 or 3 times,
yep.
and we spoke last week at the Mike England and Alan Gilzindo, and you said to yourself, you said to me, sorry, that you know, sometimes have to pinch yourself about how you got the job, and one day someone's going to tap you on the shoulder and say, all right, mate, you know, that's enough, come on, you know, wake up from the dream. But so how did it all start, and how did you get the job?
Well, it was, I was, now let me think. So this is going back 9 or 10 seasons, and I was a season ticket holder, and always went with my dad, which most of us do. You know, we start watching Spurs with our dads, and that was always the thing for me. And unfortunately, my dad had been ill, and he had a bad stroke, and we'd stopped going. So we were going to play Norwich. And my wife, although I was just about to get married to, was from Norwich, and it was, and her dad had worked for Norwich City as well in the past. And it was the first game that we'd played against Norwich, because when they went up to the Premier League some time before last. And I spoke to, you remember, you know, David Jensen, you know, Kid Jensen, the DJ?
Yeah, of course, Crystal Palace fan.
Yeah, exactly. Big Crystal Palace fan. And I knew that he was friends with Mike Rollo, who's the commercial director at the time at Spurs.
Yeah.
So I'd spoken to him, and, you know, because we worked together on Gold, or Capital Gold, as it was at the time. And I said, you know, anybody at Spurs, you know, I could plug some tickets. And he said, hey, you know, hey, you want to speak to Mike? So I said, well, I've sort of dealt with him before. And he said, hey, I'll call him. So anyway, he calls Mike, and Mike phones me and says, look, you know, we'd love to, you know, come along. And, you know, you, your dad, and you bring your wife, and you can have a dinner, and you can meet. And I'm thinking, this is ridiculous. This is amazing. Anyway, then he calls me a couple of days later, and he said, would you at all be interested in hosting in one of the lounges? Because people don't know. Radio is my thing, and I've been doing it for, like, 20 years or so.
Yeah.
Worked for Virgin and BBC and those people. So then he said, you know, would you be interested in hosting? I said, oh, yeah, absolutely. So then I get a call the day before the game, and he said, listen, Martin Shivers, I mean, I named my dog after Martin Shivers when I was a kid. So Martin Shivers is not available. Would you be able to fill in for him? Well, I've got to tell you, I'm shaking.
Yeah.
I get in there, I walk into Spurs, and I'm introduced to all these legends, you know, from Martin Peters, Martin Shivers, Pat Dillon, Martin wasn't there, because Martin Peters, Pat Jennings, Ralph Coates that was there at the time. This is all my childhood heroes.
Yeah.
And you know when you get a bit nervous and you sort of under chat a bit, and I was over, but I was in a terrible state. I just thought, I can't do this, it's just too much for me. So we watched the game, and I sat there and I thought, I know I've got to do an interview with a player afterwards, and I was speaking to Pat Jennings, and all I could think was, oh my gosh, are you Pat Jennings? Oh no, I'm not listening to what you said. Honestly, it was ridiculous. And I've interviewed film stars, loads of people over the years, but because they were like, it was my Spurs players, that we were, you know, had trouble with that. So, saw the game, went back into the Bill Nicholson suite and did it, and then they said, right, if you can do the interview with the player and get the people up for fun. And that for me, I mean, that was my bread and butter, and it was easy. It was really easy for me
yeah.
to do that, and then that was it. And then I've never missed a game since. So after that, about a year after that, they said, listen, David Ginola's going to be here. Will you interview him on the pitch at half time? And I'd never done that. And so I said, yeah, no, I'd love to. Whereas then I was thinking, oh, God, on the pitch. And they said, well, Sky going to take it live? And Ginola, another one of my heroes. So when I went out to do that, the very first time I went out on the pitch, we used to do it right in the middle of the centre circle because they didn't have the camera up close.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what an effect it would have on me to actually put my foot on the ground, on the actual grass of White Hart Lane.
Yeah.
I had no idea. So I put my foot on the grass, and I was introduced by Pete, and I looked up at the screen, and I could see myself walking very slowly. It was the most surreal moment of my life. And then I got head rush. I looked at the grass, and everything started rushing because I was so overwhelmed, and I thought, oh my God, I'm going to pass out. So I'm God, everything started shaking. I was like, oh, God, I can't remember. Yeah, this is too much. And I look up, and in front of me is David Ginola with his eyes wide open, going, like this. And then comes towards me. And then that was it. It took that baptism of fire, and it was all great, and that was it. And I've done the same ever since.
Fantastic. And one of the questions that I've written down here is, when you do interview David Ginola, whose
yeah.
idea is it that he actually just takes the mic off you?
You know what? There's one thing that I can't stand, Steve, and that's when I'm doing an interview, I cannot bear it if someone takes the mic, because I'm very much, I'll jump in with things.
Yeah.
So if someone takes the microphone out, and he's like, oh, he's a bloody nice. Every time I hold it, he just wants to take the microphone off me. So I end up making up there, I'm thinking, this is going to be like a wrestling competition.
Yeah.
So I'm going to let him have it, and then off he goes. Right, I'm like standing there like a lemon. But the last time he did it, I couldn't believe he actually did manage to let me hold on to it, because I actually had a quiet word before.
Yeah.
Because
I know one time he got it, and he just started walking down the right wing,
yeah.
or down the left wing, and was sort of
yeah,
talking to the crowd. Do you remember when I used to run down here and all this? And you're standing there, like shrugging your shoulders, going, well, what do I do now? Do I go with him?
Yeah,
I know.
But you know what? At the end of the day, and this is how I've always been, it's for me, it's always about the person that comes out. I'm as excited to see them usually as everybody else is. I mean, for example, when we had Gilly, when Alan Gilzean came back for the first
yeah.
time in 40 years last season, I mean, it was really hairs on the back of the neck. It was unbelievable. And I never prepare what I'm going to ask. And I just will just think, well, I want to know this, and tell me this, and where have you been, and what do you think about that? And that's how it usually works, because I'm absolutely a fan first and foremost. And I'll just ask, hopefully, questions everybody else wants to know, like, where do you go on holiday?
Yeah, but I mean, I've got a funny feeling that we're going to see a lot more of Alan Gilzane, because I think he's really enjoyed, although he said he doesn't like being in the limelight, I think he really enjoyed last week at the Hall of Fame dinner. He really enjoyed answering those questions. And the Spurs show that was released yesterday, where he did the thing with Pat Jennings, is a fantastic, I don't know if you've heard it yet, but it's absolutely fantastic. And he really sort of expands on those stories. And I think he's enjoying being back, you know, and talking about it and reliving those days. So, you know, hopefully we'll get him, we get him on this show maybe, or, you know, certainly on the pitch again, because I think he's, you know, enjoying talking about those stories, definitely.
Absolutely. But the bizarre thing, Steve, is when he came, it was people have been talking about it, Chiv and Pat and all the boys and Phil Beale have been talking about Gilly for years, and they'd not seen him. And then one day when we came in, we always have a meeting. We get in to like White Hart Lane. So if it's 3 o'clock kickoff, we get in at 10:30.
Yeah.
And then we all meet, and there's me and all the legends, and there'll be Paul Allen and Martin Chivers and all the boys. There's about 13, 14 of them. And guess the other one out. So I'm sitting amongst them. And then they'll go through and say, right, this is, you know, who we've got in today. This is, you know, because they all go around to different lounges and all have the different things they have to do. And they said, well, Gilly's in today. And I went, hang on, what? They said, well, I think Gilzane's in today. And that was when I said, well, does anybody know about this? So I said, well, we've got to sort this out. So that was when I ran off and got on the phone and said, get some clips of Alan Gilzane. Do you think he'll go on the pitch? I said, Jordan, there's any chance he'll do an interview at half time? So Pat said, well, you know, I'll ask him. And then he came back and he said, yeah, he's fine. And so all the legend and all the, this is what I was talking to Mike Lee about from the Spurs show the other day, so I helped sort of get him to go on there.
Yeah.
And said, you know, we were just sort of thinking, well, what's he going to be like? Is he going to be this very elusive Howard Hughes, reclusive character? But it's like, no, the loveliest man, speaks brilliantly, and as you know, because, you know, you were at the Hall of Fame dinner.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. It really was absolutely fantastic. He's come back.
Yeah. I mean, he's fantastic. Yeah, I mean, there was one moment where the desserts came up or something, and obviously they sort of said, "Oh, go and sit down." You know, they're going to have their desserts, my view. And like the heavies of Tottenham come in and stand around, you know, the players, so that no one can come in for an interview. And there was one fella, I don't know where he was from, Norway or somewhere, and had this flag, and he sort of said, "No, I'm going to get this autograph off Alan." And the like one of the Spurs heavies was like, no, he's having his dessert, leave him alone. He went, no, it's fine, come over here.
Yeah.
And it was like really nice, you know. I thought, oh, what a nice touch, you know, because this guy obviously was desperate for his autograph, and he'd been waiting.
It's amazing. His daughter-in-law was there for the second night, and I was talking to her about it, and I said, well, she came along, it was with her little boy, you know, his grandson that came on the pitch.
Yeah.
And I said, did you have any idea how famous and how revered he is at White Hart Lane? And she said, I had absolutely no idea. You know, we knew he played football, we knew he'd sort of played for Spurs, but I had no idea that he would go. And you wouldn't, would you? Because, you know, if it's like, whether it be your granddad or father-in-law or something, and he doesn't get involved in it at all, and all of a sudden goes back to White Hart Lane, and you think, my goodness, and that's how it was. And I think he has enjoyed it. I'm really glad he's enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I mean, as you referred to, 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, his name really did come back again, didn't it? Because of we had Berbatov. And that brings me on to another thing that we want to discuss here, because I not only do I listen to all the Spurs shows, I actually listen to some of the Arsenal ones as well. I find them quite amusing.
Yeah.
They're not amusing at the moment because
I don't listen to them at the moment. I only listen to them when they're losing.
But this week they are talking about Berbatov, and they are saying that if the rumours are true, obviously Berbatov wants to leave. He's not happy at Fulham, and why would you be? He wants to go somewhere, and Arsenal might be interested. Now, I put a question out there: who would you know? Because some Spurs fans say, "No, no way, we don't want him back." Blah blah blah. But if you pose the question, well, he's going to join either Tottenham or Arsenal. Who would you rather him join? Paul, I'll throw that out to you.
There's no question. He can have Tottenham or anybody. I'd love to see him back at Spurs.
Absolutely.
See, the way I see things, not only is the fact of what a fantastic footballer this guy is, but also is that I'm never worried when people go, I mean, if we've got someone coming in, it's people leaving. That's what worries me. I'm not worried about people coming in, because if they come in and they don't make the grade, then they don't play in the first team.
Exactly.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Bring in as many as you like, and they can play, and if they play well enough, they play. It's people leaving. That's what upsets me. I just can't understand what people go, oh, no, we don't want him. Oh, we don't want him to play. We don't, we'll give him a go, and if he doesn't work, then he doesn't play. It's as simple as that. But no, I love Berbatov. I really did. And I again, there was another one. I always do the Man of the Match award, and I remember when he was playing. And he came up, and it was like a masterclass once. And I came up, he came up, and he was all cool as Berbatov is, and I just said, oh, it was great. And he just went, did you enjoy it? And it was almost like, did you enjoy that performance? There was this arrogance, but you know what? When they can play football like that, I'd love to see him back.
Yeah.
But whether it's going to happen, I mean, do you reckon it's going to happen? Do you reckon there's a chance it may happen?
Well, I would be well up for it. What I dread, though, is him watching Soccer Sunday or whatever, and him playing up front for the other team up the road. That feels
like you
dread.
Could,
because
I
you
can't
know,
see him.
Because you know that he'd be blimmin' fantastic for them with all that, you know, ammunition they've got. And, you know, so I don't want to see that. I'd have him.
I don't
absolutely.
Think.
And I don't begrudge people who want to leave Tottenham, you know, especially 5 or 6 years ago when we weren't doing that great, to go and play for Man United and go and want to win a few things. Especially if you're born in Bulgaria and you probably hadn't heard of Tottenham until about a month before you signed for them. So, you know.
I agree.
You can't blame him for wanting to go and play for Man United.
No, I don't think anybody does. I don't think anybody's ever blamed Berbatov for playing at Manchester United. Of course, when he came back and, oh, yeah, because remember Michael McIntyre baiting him when he came on the pitch at half-time.
Have you read my notes? Because that's my next question.
What was it really?
No,
what do you remember about it? Do you remember the Berbatov baiting then?
Of course, yeah. But I know also that there is a pre-story for the Michael McIntyre. And then when he came on for the chat, and then afterwards, I think, as well. So would you mind telling that story?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I invited Michael McIntyre to come along to Spurs. A radio station I was working at the time, I was doing Gold, Capital Gold, and I was also working for Heat Radio as well. And when guests would come in, I've got like a Spurs screensaver, which would work great, because when guests would come in, someone famous would go, oh, you Spurs fan? And I go, yeah. And then that's how I am with quite a few people in the past that have come in and I've had them on the pitch. Anyway, he comes in. I said, is it true you're a Spurs fan? He said, oh, yes, I love Spurs. I said, well, you come along and we'll look after you, and, you know, you can come on the pitch after. Okay, that'll be great. There we go. So anyway, it happened, and he came along, and we sat in the Oak Room. And he was very edgy and uncomfortable. And I was saying, well, look, we'll get up and have a chat up on the stage. He said, what do you mean? What are we going to do? What are you going to ask me? What are you going to do? Anything. So finally he gets up. And then after being all nervous, he gets up on the stage and he absolutely kills him. He absolutely knocks everybody down. He's hilarious. So then I said, right, now we're going to do this thing on the pitch at halftime. What do you mean? I can't do that. I can't prepare anything. What are you going to ask for? I said, I don't know what I'm going to ask. He goes, well, you've got to know what I'm going to ask. Anyway, it all got like this, and it was all getting very uncomfortable. I was thinking, for crying out loud, this is going to be easy. You should just come out. And we get out on the pitch at halftime. This is Manchester United. It's the first game since Berbatov has been back, and we were doing a draw for an open or something like that. And anyway, he's down in the tunnel. And as we walk down, he's like a shaking wreck. And I'm doing my little preamble of doing half times or something. And I can hear him go, don't ask me anything. I will do the draw, but don't ask me anything. I don't want to talk. And I think, for goodness sake. So anyway, I go, blah, blah, blah. Michael McIntyre. Anyway, he takes the microphone, and anybody who was there, you know, will know what happened. He just went bananas. And he was talking about Hunt flying like a salmon. And then he said, right, the draw is. I said, sir, who's the winner? He said, the winner? Well, I'll tell you who the loser is. The loser is Berbatov. See, the thing is, obviously, in the position I'm in, can't do anything that's going to antagonise anybody. You know, it's a very tricky, especially in a hot mid like that. You've got to be careful.
Yeah.
And I just remember looking at the camera and just thinking, and just going, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And I could think, and all I could see was me going back into the stand, and that was the end. I was the guy that brought him in. And I was thinking, this is a disaster. And the guy went, but no, and then he came back and got the microphone, and then he went back on and we recovered. But anyway, I was just thinking, oh, that's terrible. And I spoke to his agent. I said, oh, no, never again. I can't go through that again. But then after that, people started going, oh, I was there that day. I was at that. And I saw him, funny enough, in Wardle Street about a year later. I was walking, and I said, Michael, and he said, And he said, people still come up to me while I'm doing the roadshow and saying, I was there that day. So it will happen again. We will do it again.
I mean,
I'm not quite sure.
I've seen him up there, he goes on the telly, doesn't he?
He's always there, yeah. He's always there.
You know, and I like him, you know, he's funny, and but went to see him last year at the O2, brilliant. But, I just find that hilarious that you know, he was so nervous before going on and what have you, and then grabbing the mic, and I think he was going, shoot hard, and all this.
I remember my arm behind his jacket, and I was tugging his jacket to say, calm down, will you shut up, don't do this, you're going to kill, my job's going to go for this.
I'm going to give a tiny bit of credit here to that team up the road when you interviewed Roger Lloyd-Pack. Because that was the Arsenal game, if I remember rightly.
And they
started chanting, "Trigger is a something." Oh, Trigger, you're a there.
Trigger, you're a.
And I must say, it was funny. But he was quite hard to interview, if I remember. I can't remember that well, but I remember it.
I do remember it well because he's another one that I'd spoken to on my show before, and I knew he was a big Spurs fan. And when that started, I saw his eyes glaze over, and I've seen it so many times. And famous people that have come out, and as soon as they get out on the pitch, you see the eyes go, and it's right, question after another, question after question. And I could hear those fans. I've got to tell you, I was like trying to think, oh, okay. I remember saying on the microphone, I said, Roger, just look at me, just concentrate.
Yeah.
What, tell me about your first game, stuff like that. And it was just like, because it can be really, it really can be intimidating. If you imagine, you know, like I said about when the first time I walk out there, you know, especially if you're a Spurs fan and you walk out, and he'd been going for like 50, 60 years.
Yeah, well,
the first time you ever get to walk out there and you just go, oh my God, this is just amazing. And you can't help it.
Well, he's like a proper fan because I saw him about 3 weeks prior to that game in the Bell and Hare. In the corner, just sort of with his hat, sort of head down, you know, and just having a beer. And the story goes, someone I was chatting to said, yeah, he was actually asking for a ticket. He didn't even have a ticket for the game, and he was he's asking people. So you know, he's a proper fan there. And I was wondering also, obviously, as you walk around the up in all the hospitality and that lot, is there any other Spurs like celebrities that you know we perhaps don't know is a Spurs fan?
Well, there's Neil Pearson, you know, the actor Neil Pearson, who got famous for Drop the Dead Donkey, and he's a great actor, and he sits in the East Stand, and he came in and did a show I was doing. I said, well, will you come on the pit? And he just went, no, I really don't want to. And I said, well, why? And he said, he goes home and away, and he said, because I want to feel like I can shout at the team, and then I feel as if it will lose the experience for me. And Stephen Mangan's the same. He's a season two. Of course, he's been on a couple of times.
Yeah.
But he goes to every game. And there's a few other actors.
Paul Whitehouse, I've seen lots of times.
Yeah. He won't do it. He won't. I've asked him, and he says he doesn't really want to do it.
Yeah.
Kenneth Branagh, who I've been trying to get. I love to have Kenneth Branagh. And I've seen him a couple of times, and I saw him in the box holders bar. It was one Christmas, and he was putting a bet on, and I'm a huge Kenneth Branagh fan, and I said, gosh, I'd love it, would you play? And he said, yeah, I will. He goes, yes, I promise I will at some point. And then he came for his 50th birthday, and he had his 50th birthday, and there was Brian Blessed was with him, and there was a load of famous actors all in the box, because he's a huge Spurs fan, and I said, you know, will you come on? And I even got onto his agent, and I've set for his production company, and I just can't get him to do it. And it's the same as Jude Law as well. I saw Jude Law in a box, and he was looking over, and he sort of smiled and waved. And I thought, oh, I can't believe Jude Law. But I'm trying to get him, and he's another one. I think there's something that they're a bit worried about it. But what I try and say is, like, everybody knows that you love Spurs. You will get such a huge reception. I just wish they'd do it. I'd love it if I could get them out there. Yeah. I really, really want to get them
to. I'll tell you who I miss walking through that box holders bar. Sylvia Vandegaard.
Yeah, Sylvie. Yeah, she was lovely, wasn't she? Yeah, she was lovely. I remember doing the
I remember doing something
in there, and there she was. Oh my goodness!
Talk about
me.
A room that just stands still when she walks through the door, and like jaws.
Is she available now? No, she is available now. Is she, Steve? I think she is around. She's available.
Well,
now she's available. She doesn't turn up anymore. And maybe now it's time for her to come back to White Hart Lane.
Have you got a number?
Now that her and Raffer aren't together anymore.
No. And the other one I saw, there was Pixie Lott. I think she's a Spurs fan.
No, I don't think she is. Actually, I think she's a West Ham fan. I know a couple of friends of hers from school are Spurs fans. And I did ask, and I think she came along. I may be wrong, but I don't think she is Spurs.
She was at a Charlton game. It was a friend of mine has got a box there. And I remember a friend of the family said, oh, you know, you can have the box with some friends and family and what have you. And I think it was the FA Cup several years ago. So, I thought Pixie Lott was a Spurs fan. There we go. Oh, well.
I don't know. We'll put a question mark next to her. Just put a pencil question mark. We're not sure about Pixie Lott. We can live without Pixie Lott, though. I mean, I think we'll be all right without Pixie. Yeah. You know, it's not really to worry. But Adele, of course, is another one. So I want Adele to come out. But what about this? How would you feel about this? I don't know whether I can convince Spurs to do this. But Barry Manilow is in the country in about May time. Can you imagine if Barry Manilow came out and sang Can't Smile Without You on the pitch at half time?
Well,
what do you think about that?
Well, I think that's brilliant. Well, make it happen.
You know, it wouldn't be a dry eye in the house, would there, really? And although Barry's eyes are a little bit pulled back these days, I think, you know, most of us would appreciate that.
And have you play enough Barry Manilow records, presumably, to...
I don't know whether we could go that far. You know, I think we could let Barry play his song, seeing as it means so much to all of us, but that'll do. If he starts going into Copacabana, we'll kick him off, and we'll bring Martin Chivers back on.
No, I was going to say, actually, when we spoke about Martin Chivers, of course, just before your time, doing all the interviews and what have you, we had to watch Martin Chivers with a load of deck chairs and some fat bloke dribbling in and out of it, and... Oh,
I did take over the deck chairs. I did enjoy the deck chairs. Yeah, I did inherit the deck chairs from Martin.
I'd rather go and stand down waiting for a crummy hot dog for 15 minutes than...
But you didn't have the deck chairs.
Now, the other thing I've got to say on this show is I've had Daniel Wynne on the show several times. Lovely guy.
Yeah.
He is a lovely commentator. This little announcement, I'm very excited about this, is that I've... There was a secret auction a couple of weeks ago to go and be a co-commentator with Daniel Wynne, and I was lucky enough to get it. So the Crystal Palace game, which is coming up into January, just in the middle of January, I'm actually going to be up there, and I haven't told Daniel yet, and I tweeted him today and said I've got a little announcement to make, because every time he comes on, I badger him and say, listen, mate, come on, get me next to you. I'll do it for nothing. In fact, I'll pay to come sit next to you and be a co-commentator. So there you go.
You're
so
not going to sing Hot Shot Tottenham, though, are you, Steve?
Oh, you never know. You know, you've encouraged me to maybe do it more.
Oh dear, no, may not be a good one. Well, give it a go. We'll see how we're going. If there's a lull in the game, then maybe that's the time to go in with the chorus.
Yeah. Are you just a couple more questions, Paul, if you don't mind?
Of course.
Are you a let's get top four guy, or are you a let's win a trophy guy?
I'm both, actually. Unfortunately,
no, you can't be both. You can't be both.
Can't be both. I've always been let's win a trophy, because I love the trips to Wembley.
Yeah.
But you know what? If I had the choice, I'd take the top four, because the Champions League nights were fantastic.
I think, though, to be honest with you. And I think this season, because we've lost out the last two seasons, you know, it's been Champions League. I just think this season, do you know what? Let's just go and win that Capital Cup, and then we can have another trophy. And when the Arsenal haven't won anything, I mean, just this season, let's just win the trophy, and then we'll worry about the Champions League again next year, something like that. Go on, mate.
Yeah, but do you think that would actually be rubbing Arsenal's nose in it by winning the Capital One Cup, and then getting, let's say that they get in the Champions League? Yeah, I don't think so. Mm. Everybody really wants. I just think it's such an important thing, the Champions League. Yeah, I'd love to win it. But let's go for both. Why not? Why do we only choose one? See, the thing is, if we can get that, it just means so much. And you can bring in the right players that you want. These days, it's so much about the Champions League as far as a football club is concerned. That's what I want to happen. I really, really do. And I love you know, yes, of course, I want to win a cup, but it is, I want both. I'm greedy, Steve. What can I tell you? Let's go for both.
Well, there's no reason
why. Let's win the FA Cup and the Captain World Cup, because, of course, you know, we've got an easy third-round tie in the FA Cup, so it's almost a bye for us, which is good. And then we can move on to Champions League as well.
Well, I mean, that is almost like a cup final in the middle of the season, isn't it? I think it's on the 4th of January. It's on the Saturday evening, which is a good idea.
Yeah.
Good planning there. Saturday evening game, But
I'll be in there amongst the crowd as I, you know, enjoying it properly, properly without worrying about any interviews at half time. I can't wait.
But the old nerves leading up to that will be like a middle of the season cup final. I can just tell.
Yeah.
I mean, and whoever wins it will be bragging about it for weeks, and whoever loses it will of course say, well, don't worry, you've got that to worry about now, and we'll just concentrate on the league. But you know.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the way it is.
What would you sacrifice to win that game, Steve? To win, to beat the Arsenal away, third round, what would you sacrifice for that?
In terms of, what, a limb?
Anything. Don't mind. And yeah, a limb. Yeah, what would you, a hand? A finger?
Yeah.
An ear. Well, how about an ear? Just the tip off your little finger. For the win, yeah?
I probably would.
Two fingers for 5-0. Would you do that?
I'd have to be able to actually do 5-0 on my fingers.
Yeah, good point.
No, so I couldn't lose all my fingers, so I could actually do it. But no, I mean that is, you know, we've got the West Ham game coming up, which we all want desperately to win. And if we lose that, I just think that will be disastrous. And then we've got this Arsenal game where we can again, you know, we can just say, because we haven't really done it this year. We haven't had a game where we've gone see where we are, because we haven't really beaten a top side, and we haven't crucified one of the lower sides, although we should have done because of the number of chances we've had. So this Liverpool game coming up at the weekend is a chance for us to say see where we are, and that Arsenal game as well is a great chance to say see where we are. We might do it, we might not, we don't know, but, you know, let's see. Paul, just one final question, mate. Who's the first name on the team sheet for you?
I think it's going to be a boring, obvious one, but it'd have to be Lloris, I think. I think that would be the first. But what about the outfield player? Gosh, it took you, I don't really think.
I mean, for us, we bang on about Sandro every week. Because
Sandro, no, I was just going to say Sandro. I love Sandro. And not only that, but I tell you, as a bloke, he's absolutely fantastic. He's everything you imagine he would be. He's a lovely fella. He's got an amazing personality. He's great fun. He would, you know, he would give everything in any game for Spurs. You're never going to see this sort of guy thinking, oh, he's not putting it in there. He's absolutely fabulous.
Good with the interviews after the games when he's won man of the match?
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. We once did, there's the famous YouTube clip of him doing Kung Fu, and I actually had him do it on stage. And I said, look, we'd love to see you. Can you do this? Anyway, I said to him, you know what? That's all very well, but I think I could take you. So then we had this fake Kung Fu fight in front of about 250 people, and then everybody that would come up, do like sponsors, and I'd go, ha 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 ha, do the Carl Douglas thing, and then he would start it. And then he's promised me that the next game he wins man of the match, and if he scores, he will bring his guitar up and he will perform a song in front of everybody. I mean, the guy's fantastic. So he is my current favourite player. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, you know, that's who we say. And, you know, I just think he's brilliant. And hopefully we can keep hold of him for a couple of years. Listen, mate, it's been fantastic having you on. You know, hopefully, you know, I'll bump into you again, you know, up at the lane. And, you know, and we'd love to have you on the show again, of course. No, it's been absolutely brilliant, and I think we've got Daniel Wynne in a couple of weeks as well, and he can tell us what you're really like, because you come across as far too nice.
I'll tell you the truth. Thanks a lot for asking. I always, if I talk Spurs, I'll keep you going forever, so I probably have to keep you going forever, so I'm sorry about that, but no. We enjoy the podcast, and thanks a lot for asking. It's great.
No, brilliant. Thanks ever so much, Paul.
Thanks, mate.
All right, cheers. Bye now.
silence and the lull of noise. The whistle blows, first half for the boys. Then a voice will echo out, down the concourse and echoes about. Most times he's got a star to present, life after Spurs and where the player went. It's about telling us the latest news. When he talks, we ponder and hear his views. A Tottenham man with a wonderful job. Very jealous am I with the shelfside mob. It's a position that many a fan would like. But for the foreseeable future, it's Paul Coyte on the mic. So here's just a tribute to a voice that I know. A voice that is heard as the lane where you go. A voice that is recognisable and is part of the show. A part of the club where so many of us go. There has never been ever such dulcet a tone. Cardi, here's your poem as you listen on the phone. The thing that I love most as you stand pit side alone is the fact that your words echo out many a Spurs groan. Come on, you Spurs.